So, Dr. Gibbs.
I think I finally figured out what idol worship is. It's praying that your computer will work, that your PowerPoint presentation will actually function. There must be something wrong with that, but I don't know what it is. But I have backup plans in case. So just to give you an introduction while Glynis does her magic here, I'm going to be talking about an area that I'm particularly interested in, which is, as Naomi pointed out, the borderland between traditions. And I start in one tradition and then venture into what I would say is the wilderness in between. And before getting started, though, thank you so much. Didn't even have to pray. A human being helped me. I want to thank my my teachers, both those that are here today, Naomi Seidman, who did go through my thesis with me, and it was a toughie. Munir Jiwa, as well, whom I studied Islam, and then those that aren't here, I think that Dina may have, I'm not sure if she's here, but she was my thesis advisor, Dina Aronoff, and then Mahmoud Ayoub, whom I studied Sufism, and Nick Nyanjiu, who is a teacher of Ibn Arabi, and I've been studying with him some as well. So given those names, you might expect to see some cross-pollination going on. So my question is, who is Ishmael? And I start with a photograph of something that I really liked that Rabbi Gottlieb said, which is, the path is made by walking. Well, this is the place where Ishmael walked and made his path. And my question is, who is Ishmael? And I just wanted to start with a quick poll to sort of get a sense of, does anybody out there have positive feelings about Ishmael? Anybody with negative feelings? Great. Anybody with just neutral? Anybody who really doesn't know or care? Well, good. That seems a good place to start. So, but why talk about Ishmael today at all? I mean, aren't we? I'm supposed to be one of the Jewish people talking about Isaac, I think. But Ishmael is connected with our high holy days as well. And the first day's reading on Rosh Hashanah is actually the story of Sarah, and actually rather a dysfunctional family scene of Sarah and Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael and Isaac. When Hagar and Ishmael are sent into the wilderness. And that's something, Reform Judaism, we don't even read that anymore. We just read Genesis 22, which is about Isaac and Abraham. So I am very interested in Ishmael for that reason, and for other reasons. But as well, in Islam, Ishmael is connected with central aspects of the Islamic ritual, including pilgrimage, Eid al-Adha, and the building of the Kaaba, sacrifice and redemption, all of the themes of the day. Why talk about Ishmael in context of our topic of transformation? It's kind of cool. Ishmael is the focus not only of his own remarkable personal transformation, but of the transformative process occurring at the birth of a new religion. Ishmael, like Abraham and Sarah, is found in both the Quran and the Bible. He and his father Abraham, however, seem to inhabit more fully what I call the borderland between the scriptures, a place that's fascinated me since I first started to study scriptures about 10 years ago, which is another story. A lot can be illuminated by studying and exploring this borderland between the sacred scriptures. It's really a place of mystery grounded upon shifting sands of oral tradition, a kind of a time warp where ordinary rules of time and space no longer apply. A perfect spot for transformation. So the story of the family of Abraham, as I first encountered it in Genesis 12 to 25, seems to me the entry or portal to the borderland, from the Bible side. And when you read it, you perceive, or at least I perceive, something unusual seems to be going on there. The text seems to leave large gaps and holes that's true of most parts of the Torah, but this one particular section seems to beckon to us today in context of our subject. So now I'm inviting all of you to join me in the borderland, that place of strangeness which will, I hope, provide an opportunity to transform our views not only of Ishmael, but perhaps of ourselves. So this is sort of a text-based talk, I would say. So what I have done throughout my studies here at GTU, and I really am grateful to have this opportunity, because I don't know if this is possible in many places in the world, but I put up a verse of Genesis and then juxtapose a verse from the Quran. And I'm open to any interpretations. I'm learning here, I'm still learning, and I very much want to hear more about the Quran and Islam as well. So, but these two verses seem to be very different from each other. And he, Ishmael, shall be a wild ass of a man, his hand shall be against every man, and every man's against him, and he shall dwell in the face of all his brethren. This is what Hagar is told when she learns that she is going to have Ishmael. This is from the Quran. Remember Ishmael in the book. Truly, he had been one who was sincere in his promise, and he had been a messenger, a prophet. He had been commanding his people to formal prayer and purifying alms, and he had been with his Lord one who was well-pleasing. I think there are a lot of words there, a lot of phrases that we could learn more about. So people probably know Ishmael's story as told in Genesis. Do you want me to go through it briefly, the high points or the low points? Need water for that. Just like Ishmael, I guess. Abraham has been told by God that his offspring will be too numerous to count, as numerous as grains of sand at the sea and the number of stars in the heavens. Yet by the age of 86, he still has no children. So Sarah, seeing she has not born children, offers her slave girl, who is her maidservant, Hagar. It turns out Hagar is actually a princess if you look at the Jewish Midrash. However, here she happens to be Sarah's maidservant, to provide them with an heir. Hagar conceives a son and either behaves haughtily and or Sarah becomes jealous and oppresses her, so she runs away. An angel of God finds her at a well and gives her a very powerful prophecy. The good news, she will have a son, and he will be the father of a multitude. His offspring shall be too many to count. That might sound familiar. However, the bad news, perhaps he won't be very nice, but he'll fight with everyone, which is what we read in the first verse. In any case, on the angel's instructions, Hagar returns to Sarah in the camp of Abraham. When Ishmael is 13, his father Abraham learns that he will have another son, Isaac, who will be the inheritor of his covenant. Abraham circumcises all the men in his camp at that time, including Ishmael. Sarah does conceive, and after Isaac is born and weaned, she sees Ishmael playing, mitzachek, remember that, with Isaac, and banishes both Hagar and Ishmael to what she believes will be their death. On God's orders, Abraham reluctantly complies. Hagar and Ishmael go into the wilderness, and there Ishmael nearly expires of thirst until he's rescued by another angel of God. God opens Hagar's eyes, so she discovers a well. After this, she and Ishmael live in the wilderness of Paran, and Hagar gets a wife for Ishmael from Egypt. Later, Ishmael has 12 sons and a daughter, which is rather parallel to Jacob. And also, another fact that's not really talked about a whole lot, Isaac and Ishmael meet up again when they bury their father Abraham after he dies at a ripe old age, as described in Genesis 25:9. So, who is this Ishmael? So, if you look at the biblicist sources, the descriptions don't sound that great. And that might be because, likely, one of the techniques of the commentators, both in pre-Islamic and post-Islamic, was to map biblical characters onto nations and religions. For example, Esau and Edom were associated with Rome and Christianity, and Ishmael was first associated with Arabic peoples and then with Islam, and including Islamic nations that perhaps at times were harsh with the Jews. And so his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him seemed to provide prophetic power to any circumstance in which Jews would find themselves in conflict with Muslims or Arabs. Seems to want me to get rid of my viruses, but I think I'll wait. Okay, so this was the case also for other instances where Ishmael is mentioned in the Bible. With one enigmatic exception this is sort of the focal point of my talk, with the exception I'm going to tell you about. This word mitzachek, what does that mean? Basically, it means playing. And so the biblical commentators ask, in Midrash Rabbah, which is an early Midrash, Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. They asked, why would he be sent out just for playing with Isaac? So it must be something more. And so the thought was, maybe he was shooting arrows at Isaac, and maybe he was saying he was only playing. And later on, people said, well, perhaps he was mocking Isaac. Or, of course, he was a threat to the inheritance. So these are the things that we learn about Ishmael. But in light of these more glaring apparent negative qualities, it's easy to overlook the more subtle hints and clues of Ishmael's nature in our Torah. Clearly, it's mentioned several times in the promise to Hagar and later in promises to Abraham that Ishmael will have a great future. However, there are a couple of things that are less obvious also that I noticed that I wanted to point out as well. And that is, who is this Ishmael really is the question I would like to ask. So there are two things I find curious. First, though Ishmael's name means God will hear, Ishmael never actually says a word in the entire Torah. He might cry out, we hear that he cried out and God heard him, but we don't know what he said. So how do we find out what Ishmael's like if we never know what he said? Never know what he said. Next, if Ishmael's bad, as many commentators later said, what could the next verse I'm going to show you possibly mean? And here's the clue. Okay, so we're back to where Hagar is in the desert. God opened Hagar's eyes, and she saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and let the boy drink. God was with the boy, and he grew up. He dwelt in the wilderness, and he became a bowman. He lived in the wilderness of Paran. So there's really not, I tried to find commentary on the part I have marked in yellow. There's a lot of commentary about the rest, but nobody really says there's one reference in Genesis Rabbah, which is a pre-Islamic midrash, which really just looks at the grammar, but doesn't say what that means, that God was with the boy. So for me, I felt I have to go elsewhere. There's a lot about Ishmael or Ismail in the Quran, and of course in all of the legends that fill the space in between. So that's what I wanted to look at, to learn more about Ishmael. So if God was with Ishmael, essentially guiding his growth and supervising him into adulthood, how would he have become someone who would do any less than good? With that question in mind, I would like to lead you into the borderland. This is the place that we need to track, that Ishmael tracked. This is the place of pilgrimage and of facing death. Photos of the wilderness of Paran, which is where Ishmael went. But wait, what? Okay, that's the Hijaz, and that's where Ishmael is in the Quran. So somewhere in this liminal space, Ishmael goes through transformation. And this is basically the distance between, and I call this space, for now, the spatial borderland. So what does the Islamic kind of history of the prophets and the tafsir, the commentary on the verses, tell us? And for this, I turn to this really wonderful book by Rabbi Reuven Firestone, where he summarizes everything that all of the traditions there about Ishmael. And what happens to Ishmael on this journey from Paran to Mecca? So the version is different. So this is the authoritative tradition of Ibn Abbas, who is one of the main commentators and historians who was alive at the time of Prophet Muhammad. And it's included in many, many histories. So this is the story instead. Sarah gets jealous of Hagar after the birth of Ishmael and sends her out. Abraham personally guides Hagar and Ishmael to Mecca, the location of the house and the well of Zamzam. He leaves them there alone and returns to Syria. When Hagar asks him who will protect them in that desolate place, he says that he's entrusting them to God. Ishmael, in this version, was still a toddler, and being suckled, and Hagar runs out of milk. Ishmael has a seizure. Hagar cannot bear to see him die. She climbs Safa and then Marwa and runs between them seven times looking for water. She's desperate, but then she hears a voice, which turns out to be an angel, who scratches the ground and brings forth water. Hagar dams the water. And the angel tells Hagar not to worry about perishing, for the boy and his father will build the house of God there. Ishmael then grows up, and there's a whole long story about Abraham visiting several times. But the third time he comes, he tells Ishmael that they have been commanded by God to build the house. Abraham calls humanity to the pilgrimage, and at the time of the pilgrimage, Abraham and his son are tested by the sacrifice commanded by God in a vision. Ishmael, not Isaac, is the intended victim. So what can we summarize? Here, Ishmael is tried twice, so he really faces death twice. He becomes the chosen sacrifice, and Ishmael speaks for the first time. What does he say after all the silence? He says, "Accept this from us, Lord. Let us become Muslims." And then he says, "Let my people have a prophet of their own." Those are the things he says when he first speaks. And this is the house they built. Who is this Ishmael really? So I can't really go in a lot more to this because I want to get to the verse we started with at the beginning. But there's several things we learn about Ishmael in the sacrifice portion of the Quran, which is he is ready to suffer and forbear, Salim. And he also is aware that he is going to be sacrificed, participates in the decision with his father. It's always a question with Isaac, right? Okay, and here's the verse from the beginning. And remember, Ishmael in the book truly had been one who was sincere in his promise. He had been a messenger, a prophet. He'd been commanding his people to formal prayer and purifying alms, and he had been with his Lord, one who was well-pleasing. Sincere in his promise, well, the historians say that meant that he was very patient and waited for a friend who was going to meet him there at a certain place. But I also found another possible explanation in the chapter in the Fusus al-Hikmah of Ibn Arabi on Ishmael, where it says perhaps this promise is actually the promise made in the Alastu bi Rabbikum, which is the first promise humans made before creation. So let me just show you. Okay, so when thy Lord drew forth from the children of Adam, from their loins, their descendants, and made them testify concerning themselves, saying, am I not your Lord? They said, yea. Ishmael is a level up above in his relation with God. So what can we say then? So Ibn Arabi goes further to say that really the Kaaba is a metaphor for the heart, and that the trial is actually the sacrifice of the soul, or the ego, to God. And so if we look at it that way, then what does the story sound like instead? Let me tell you a last story, and then I'll be done. Given all of this, let me tell a new story of Ishmael. In this story, we see Ishmael as a traveler. He, like us, journeys along the path of life, but he takes the special way, the tariqa, that leads him through stations of the spiritual quest, the Sufi way. Though he undergoes mortal trials, he has many qualities that attest to his attainment of the spiritual milestones. Patience, sabr, siddiq, sincerity, taslim, submission. We are told he is well-pleasing to his Lord. When we find him in the Quran, and O soul at peace, this harkens to another verse, Quran 89:27-28, O soul at peace, come back thou to thy Lord, well-pleased thyself and well-pleasing unto him. When we find him in the Quran, he's building the Kaaba, a metaphor for the perfection of the heart and his ultimate achievement of fana, annihilation in God, whom he describes there tellingly as the oft-returning, bespeaking the ever-present opportunity for repentance and God's receptiveness to it as a fundamental attribute. Tawbah, or repentance, is the first step along the Sufi path. In the conclusion of the verse discussing Ishmael specifically, i.e. 1955, we learn that Ishmael attained the stage after Fana, which is called Baqa, subsistence in God. He brings back to the people alms, method of prayer. So the gifts he's received and teaches them to others, commanding his people in formal prayer and purifying alms. Like the archetypal stories of transformation told in both the pilgrimage and the Yom Kippur rituals, Ishmael must face death in order to achieve the rebirth that brings enlightenment. He is among the most exceptional, though, as despite his trouble, he achieves not only the annihilation of self and God, but the return and subsistence in God to bring these gifts to others. By following Ishmael through the borderland as the wilderness of Paran gives way to the mountains of the Hijaz, we see how this very travel transforms him from the other of the Bible to the person described mysteriously in Genesis 21:20, and God was with the boy and he grew up. That's our midrash, essentially. So I thank you for taking this journey with me, and I hope it helps some way with your own passage through the High Holy Days and understanding this first reading from the Torah. And I just want to leave you with one final good word on Ishmael. Haro'eh Yishmael b'chalom tefilato nishma'at b'davka Yishmael ben Abraham. If one sees Ishmael in a dream, his prayer will be heard, and it must be Ishmael, the son of Abraham. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gibbs, for your beautiful presentation on drawing on both traditions.
I think that about sums it up for both of us.
I was just going to say, okay, the next two speakers, do you have anything further to say?